Welcome to Clinical Conversations' 106th podcast. It comes to you from Journal Watch, a useful resource when you want to know what's happening in clinical research and what has happened for the past quarter century or so. Go to the website at jwatch.org. I'm Joe Elia. It's November 1st, 2010. I'll be joined shortly by Dr. Danielle Scherer of Physicians First Watch and the Medical University of South Carolina. This time, our interview concerns barbershops and their role in promoting cardiovascular health among African-American men. Before that, we have this brief message for you.
Quantia MD and Journal Watch are pleased to present the National Case Challenge and invite you to share your most compelling case. Case finalists will be widely promoted and viewed by tens of thousands of physicians all over the world. The grand prize winner will be selected by popular vote and receive $2,500. Each finalist receives $500. To participate, visit quantiamd.com.
A study looking at a community-based intervention in hypertension appeared last week in the Archives of Internal Medicine. The study randomized a group of about 20 black-owned barbershops in Dallas County, Texas, to one of two approaches to intervening in uncontrolled hypertension. Half the shops offered educational pamphlets on hypertension, while the intervention shops offered free blood pressure readings as well as referrals to physicians for those needing follow-up. After 10 months, when the customers' blood pressures were measured by independent clinicians, the intervention shops and their customers had achieved better hypertension control than the other shops. The study authors say their work is the first randomized trial of a barbershop-based health promotion program. We've asked Dr. Ronald Victor, the first author of the archive study, to discuss the Texas experiment with us. Dr. Victor is now director of the Cedars-Sinai Center for Hypertension and holds the Burns and Allen Chair in Cardiology Research at the Cedars-Sinai Heart Institute in Los Angeles. Welcome, Dr. Victor.
Thanks, Joe.
We wanted to ask right away, because in my experience growing up, I always thought that I knew that barbershops were multi-service organizations, but the kinds of numbers they were interested in had to do with point spreads and other things not related to blood pressure. So where did this idea come from?
Well, the barbershop has been sort of the social hub of the African-American community, especially for men, for many, many years. That's point one. Point two is that back in the Middle Ages, barbers not only cut hair, but they also were barber surgeons licensed by the King of England, and they pulled teeth and they put on leeches. So the red, white, and blue barber pole stands for the bandages in the leeching process. And so the red bandages are used for arterial blood, the blue bandages, venous blood, and the white bandages are fresh bandages. So if a barber in the Middle Ages had a red, white, and blue barber pole outside of his barber shop, that meant that advertised that he not only did hair and cut hair, but he also did these minor surgical procedures. So moving forward, the idea of two things: one, barbers as peer health educators, was the concept we had for more public health, community-based support for people with high blood pressure. The notion of, in modern day, of using barbershops to reach African-American men or African-American women for outreach, to my knowledge, started in the late 80s, early 90s. The idea, again, was that to take the socialization and frequency of haircuts in a loyal clientele and add on, not just talking about anything under the sun, but also to add health to that. And the rationale is that, so men in general, we men tend to be, if I can speak for you, certainly speak for myself, tend to be less proactive about our health than women in general. Part of that may be that women are used to going to gynecologists for well women checkups starting very early in life, and we don't have anything like that for men. For minority men, men tend to have even less contact with the healthcare system, regular checkups, than women do. And so the reason to go outside the traditional healthcare system, to go to find a popular secular site where men would come frequently, and it would be a receptive environment for health promotion.
There was a suspicion that it might work, but it had never been done in a randomized, controlled manner before.
Yeah, so most of the, I think many, many states and large cities now have had some sort of barbershop or hair salon screening programs for things such as blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, prostate cancer in men, breast cancer in women, colon cancer screening. But to my knowledge, none of them had ever been evaluated by a randomized controlled trial. Most of what has been, the information been disseminated has been on the internet in the lay press. There's been very few peer-reviewed papers, and the ones that had very little data in them. So we did some feasibility studies that were non-randomized in Dallas starting about 10 years ago, and we published the results in 2007 in the journal Hypertension, which is one of the American Heart Association journals. And the results were encouraging. We wanted to see the feasibility first of having minority and some majority medical students staff the barbershops and screen the customers as they walked in, and for men who had elevated pressures, refer them for appropriate medical follow-up. And then the second part of the feasibility study was, now instead of asking the barbers just to be supportive and have a passive role, then we wanted to turn the program over to the barbers. So the idea really is that, well, first of all, the barbershops are open at very convenient hours for the customers. They're typically closed on Sunday and Monday. But during the week, the barbershops, especially on the weekends, the barbershops may be open after hours and very early in the morning to accommodate their customers. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to staff those shops with medical students. Medical students are if you will, an army of research staff during the summer, but after the summer's over, the students go back to medical school. And if the idea really was to have the community own this program moving forward. And the barbers were the natural choice, both because their historic predecessors were barber surgeons, and because the barbers had figured out how to staff their shops many years before anyone thought about having a sort of a contemporary screening health screening program in barbershops. And then barbers as trusted peers should be in an ideal position for promoting this.
And so you had two different measures for, you know, measuring the success of the program. One was, you know, the percent of patients or participants achieving control, and then the other was, you know, the average drop in blood pressure, which was about 2 to 3 uh-huh. millimeters of mercury. Were you surprised by either of those outcomes, or was that about in the range that you had expected to find?
The change in the control rate, which was the primary outcome, was the control rate, to capsulize it, at baseline about one-third of the hypertensive customers in the barbershops had their blood pressures controlled to current recommended blood pressures for out-of-office readings, which is what this is. And then at the end of the study, which was over a 10-month period, the control rates improved in both groups. There was about a 10 percentage point increase in the control rate in the comparison group, which was an active comparator, and then it was about almost a 20% improvement in the barber-based intervention group. So although both groups improved, there was a greater improvement with the active intervention. And the blood pressure, the average systolic blood pressure, fell from baseline to outcome by about 8 millimeters of mercury in the active intervention group compared to about 5 millimeters of mercury improvement in the comparison group. So the delta, the greater improvement in the intervention group was about 3 millimeters of mercury. So it's important to say that this is not an individual cohort study. It's what's called a cluster randomized trial. We didn't randomize individual patrons within a barbershop because that would have been impossible. So we had to randomize barbershops. So given the power calculations and the anticipated results, this is about in line with what we had expected. So 3 millimeter mercury, greater improvement in blood pressure for one patient with one doctor in the doctor's office doesn't sound like very much. But if applied to a population of hundreds of thousands and possibly millions of men with hypertension at high risk for complications, that would be a substantial effect. That's, I think it's important that, that this is more of a population-based approach than an individual one-on-one approach. The idea is to make the barbershop a health-promoting environment. The other thing I'd say is that most community health promotion programs, despite a lot of effort, often have meager results, and typically many trials turn out to be negative. So a positive result in a study like this, where there's 9 barbershops in one group and 8 in the other as the major outcome groups, is a significant finding.
Mm-hmm.
The issue now is how to turn this into a effective, cost-effective, efficient program that can be scaled up and that's sustainable.
I was thinking, Dr. Victor, about why barbershops, and I guess the genius of using the barbershops is they're kind of a social center. The customers talk with each other as well as the vendor. And I was thinking, well, you know, I go to a gas station pretty regularly, but that's become a sort of a solitary activity, isn't it? I mean, you go to the pump, you put your credit card in, and but the barbers are in this trusted position because they've sometimes take a razor to your neck, and you trust them to do that.
Correct. What we found was that the average patronage in the barbershop is such that most of the men, the average men, had been coming to that same barber for approximately a decade. And they get their haircut every 2 to 4 weeks. So I think I'm a pretty popular doctor, but I've never had that sort of loyalty in most of my clinics in practice. And I think that's part of it. So the long-term patronage is one of the really wonderful characteristics of the barbershop. There's increasing policy statements from the Institute of Medicine and from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to have more community health worker programs, to have support for chronic management of cardiovascular risk factors like blood pressure, particularly in African-American men, because the risk of complications is so high and the prevalence is so high. So in a way, barbers could be seen as in the rubric of community health workers, but I think they're a unique group of community health workers. What comes to my mind when I think about an outreach program that has community health workers would be someone from the community who would have a few hours of training by a nurse and would go make a home visit every several months, perhaps, to people that at first they may not know. And so here, the barbers already have a loyal clientele that a lot of times the barbers have known the gentleman who's our customer ever since he was a child and sort of watched him grow up, and has a great trustful relationship. And with that frequent follow-up with the customers coming to the barbers, it's a great opportunity to have health education and to promote health in a very trusted relationship in an environment where it's not just you go to some place like to pump gas frequently, but that you have chance to have a real open conversation with not only this barber that you trust, but also with your friends in the barbershop. I think that has a whole lot to do with it. We all learn a lot from our friends and peers, and what's their opinion often means a lot to us in terms of our behavior. And you know, so if conversation in the barbershop, you know, often is about anything's for fair game, sports, politics, religion, just about
your blood
anything.
Pressure.
Yeah, and so now blood pressure, right? Exactly.
Well, do you think it's one of the futures? Is this one future of chronic disease management? I mean, are there other people, say, doing the same kinds of intervention with smoking or other chronic conditions, or?
I haven't seen smoking cessation programs that I know of in a barbershop, But for chronic, for screening of conditions and chronic disease management, I think it's a fascinating model. The model has to be refined to make it take it. This was a proof of concept study, and it one of the things that we tried very hard was to subject it to the scrutiny of a randomized controlled trial. So what some of the rigors here were, the evaluation process was based on blood pressures by a contracted field staff, a survey company. There's no way to blind this kind of study. You can't blind the investigators, can't blind the participants. So the best thing is to, for evaluating it, we didn't depend on the barber's blood pressures for the evaluation. We depended on the blood pressures of an independent survey company at both ends of the study.
Mm-hmm.
But to move forward, that wouldn't be what would be necessary. It's more that what were the key elements of the program that worked? How can we make the effect even stronger for less money, and have it be scalable that it could go national very quickly? And one of the things in that regard is that we used financial incentives both for the barbers and for the patrons, and so. The patrons, the financial incentive during the 10-month barber-based intervention was that we wanted the customers to go to their doctor and be their own advocates for health and show the doctor that they were really interested in getting their blood pressure controlled and that more work needed to be done, that even if they were on medication, the blood pressure was still high in the barbershop, with the idea being that these were very accurate blood pressure readings, multiple readings on multiple occasions. Mm-hmm. If you can't relax in a barbershop, if your blood pressure is high, it sure isn't white coat hypertension. The blood pressure really is too high. Mm-hmm. So the barbers, when they checked the blood pressure every time the customer came in, if the blood pressure was high, they would fill out a business card with the third reading on it. They take ask the customer, please take the card to your doctor. Visit with your doctor. The doctor will sign the card to document that there was a patient-doctor interaction. And if the customer came back with a new prescription of any kind, any prescription blood pressure medicine, then the customer would get a free haircut on us. And in Dallas, that's about $12 a haircut plus a tip for the barber. So, and we then paid the barbers financial incentives for not for including the blood pressure monitoring and follow up program in addition to their usual haircut business. And so moving forward, it'd be wonderful to minimize the financial incentives and maximize the intrinsic incentives so that the program could be self-sustaining. And I think that's one thing that needs to be done. And another big piece of it is we focus a lot on the barber-client relationship. We didn't really bring the doctors in to be an active third party in this. And we'd like to have a more seamless partnership between the barbers, the customers with elevated blood pressure, and their doctors. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're working on now. And in Altadena, California, we have a new pilot starting up, and we're trying to make the program more efficient and review the data with the local physicians and figure out how to have everyone on the same page to do this.
What is sort of the take-home message, for all the practicing clinicians out there struggling with their patients under control with their blood pressure regimens? What sort of the take-home points from your article?
So I think the main take-home point is that maybe it doesn't take a village to control blood pressure, but it takes a doctor and a barber. So for and a patient, all three need to work together. So African American men have the highest death rate from premature cardiovascular disease from uncontrolled hypertension. So if a doctor has a patient in her or his practice who's an African American gentleman with having trouble with blood pressure control, it'd be great to I bet the customer would be very surprised if the doctor ever asked them about who their barber is. It'd be a wonderful icebreaker to talk to the the patient about where they go for their haircut, and it would be great if you can involve the barber in helping to monitor the blood pressure. That would mean the barber has to have a blood pressure monitor to do that. I think a lot of another issue is that from the doctor's side, to treat hypertension, the old idea was to use one medicine. Most patients, whether they're of any race, ethnic group, and men and women, once blood pressure is elevated, it's very difficult to get blood pressure to goal values with lifestyle modifications alone. Lifestyle modifications always ought to be recommended, but not as a replacement for, but rather as an adjunct to life-saving medication. So almost everyone, with certainly African-American men who are at such high risk, should be on blood pressure medicine if they have high readings, either out of the office or in the office. And the out-of-office readings are another message that's important, that they're more accurate than office readings, because in a person's natural environment, and they can get more frequent readings. So that's a very important point. And then I think it's really important to use low-dose combination therapy for treating hypertension. Now, rather than pushing one drug to its maximum with the side effect profile being so steeply dose-dependent, typically most of the bang for the buck from most classes of blood pressure medicine occur at the low to middle part of the dose range. And it's really important to combine the low-dose medications for efficacy and avoid the side effects, with most African-American men are going to require two or three different classes of blood pressure medications to do that. The last thing, I think it's really good to have a conversation with the patient about whether the medications are causing any side effects, because sometimes patients aren't they're a little hesitant to speak up and tell the doc that they're having some side effects with the medicines, and maybe just stop, either tough it out and live through the bad side effects such as fatigue or erectile dysfunction, or just not take the medicine, rather than bringing up a sensitive topic. So it'd be great if the doctor has time to visit with the patient and go through the medications and see if they're having any kind of side effects, that the medicine could be adjusted. Because I think one of the things that we found was that awareness rates for hypertension now continue to go up, and they were high in the barbershop. There were very few barbershop clients with hypertension that were diagnosed for the first time because of our screening program. It was more the more typical scenario. Either it was the patient had mild hypertension, and the patron and the doctor had not yet pulled the trigger on starting a medication regimen, or the patient was taking medications, but it was an inadequate regimen. For one reason or the other, the blood pressure still was too high. And I think very important to not to be satisfied with almost controlling the blood pressure. A little hypertension is no good for anybody.
Dr. Victor, that's really good advice, and this is very practical work with real effect. Congratulations, and I want to thank you for spending the time with us today.
Oh, thanks, Joe. My pleasure.
Here's a look at last week's top two medical news stories. An essay in Lancet Oncology argues that clinicians should inquire about the father's side of the family when assessing a woman's breast and ovarian cancer risks. The writer reminds us that BRCA1 and 2 genes are carried equally well in men and women, and both sexes are likely to pass them along to their children. And secondly, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices has recommended that teens get a meningitis booster, since the vaccine's protection isn't lasting the full 10 years it was planned to. And the committee also advised that people aged 11 to 64 and older people who are around infants regularly should receive a booster for DTP, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, owing to the California outbreak, which shows signs of spreading elsewhere in North America. Those were the two most important stories of the week. For more, go to the First Watch website, firstwatch.jwatch.org. That's it for Conversation 106. Earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time. For myself and Dr. Danielle Scherer, Thank you for listening.